I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Face to Face. This is a show about change and about what's next. It's a show that wants to ask questions, peel back the layers of our average everyday experience, and go beyond scratching the surface. We interview amazing people with incredible ideas and stories who have done wild, weird, and wonderful things. Remember that imagination shared creates collaboration, and collaboration creates community, and community inspires social change. I'm David Peck, and this is Face to Face.
So my next interview is with Laura McNiven. She is the co-founder and director of clinic services at Springboard Clinic. You can check them out at springboardclinic.com. Make sure that you do. We have a conversation here that's about ADHD. It's kind of sensitive. It is at times difficult conversation, but it's one that's so fundamentally important for so many reasons. And Laura's going to get into that. We touch on issues around trouble focusing and mental health and procrastination, hyperactivity and safety and neurotransmitters. We get into a little bit of that talk around our brain and the prefrontal cortex and how that affects how we do what we do and how does our brain actually in fact work. We talk about self-awareness and trust. We talk about our story and blockers and relationship building and how important community is and about creative thinkers and just creativity and how that has an impact and how that plays a role in healing and in coming together to try to understand this thing called ADHD in a more meaningful and substantive way. Laura and I have, a pretty fun and interesting conversation about something that's clearly very important and something that you're going to want to hear more about. Don't forget to check them out, springboardclinic.com. And don't forget, facetofacelive.ca for a whole host of other interviews. We're coming up, or maybe we're just beyond now, TIFF 2019. So many interviews to choose from, starting to focus more and more on documentary film. If you'd like to learn more about the work that I do, you can do that at davidpecklive.com. You can find out about my writing and my public speaking. If you'd like to advertise on Face to Face, by the way, please do reach out. We would be happy to set something up for you, whether it's a banner ad on the website or maybe it's actually some shout outs during our interviews. We are growing all the time. We have a significant social media reach. Check us out online. And don't forget, too, Rabble.ca for more information about other writers, other podcasters. And Rabble is really about news for the rest of us, not only their tagline, but it's also the way they do what they do. Patreon. Don't forget, patreon.com. You can get behind face-to-face and support us there on a monthly basis. And if you can't do that financially, I get it. Maybe you could leave a review for us on iTunes or Spotify and sign up for our newsletter. Coming right up, Laura McNiven from the Springboard Clinic talking about ADHD and how it has an impact on the way we live our lives. Well, welcome to Face to Face. We are joined by another very special guest here today. That's one beautiful thing about Face to Face. We have a lot of special guests. Laura McNiven is here to chat about her new book or manual. Maybe she's going to help us with that. May we have your attention, please? Laura, thanks for your time today.
Thank you for having me.
So how about we clear that one up right out of the gate? Is it a workbook? Is this a book? It's certainly not fiction. Tell us a little bit more.
Yeah, well, I liked when you called it manual. It felt, you know, very important. But we're calling it a workbook. And it's really a book about attention issues, about ADHD, that is in small bite-sized pieces, that has characters, that has activities, and that takes you through a journey when you have attention issues of kind of coming to terms with that. So we'll probably talk a little bit more in detail in our conversation, but a workbook, it's not too lengthy. It's pretty fun. It has a light element to it as well, although obviously also has some severity to it in dealing with mental health. But I would say workbook would be your proper term.
So that's interesting. So you raised mental health, and that's somewhere I really wanted to go, because this whole notion of attention and ADHD and so on, you know, and how it's connected to mental health issues of a particular sort. I'd love to hear more about that. But before we go there, tell me a bit about the Springboard Clinic as well, and how it's connected to this project, and maybe how it sort of acted as a catalyst to move this one forward.
Mm-hmm. So the Springboard Clinic is and was my first baby. My mom and my best friend and I actually opened it almost 10 years ago. And the vision was pretty straightforward, although I think anyone who started their own business knows that it goes through many iterations Right. and evolutions. But we wanted to create a place that firstly was hopeful and strengths-based. So we wanted to deal with attention issues, ADHD, learning issues, anxiety, depression, some of those labels. But we wanted to do it in a place that said, you know what, we believe you're going to get better, and we're here to learn about you first and foremost. And absolutely, if there's a label that's part of that, then we think that will help you understand you better. We also wanted to see people of all ages. So we didn't want to just see children and then tell their parents, oh, you have to go to a different clinic. We wanted to say we're here to sort of see you no matter where you are in that lifespan journey. And why ADHD specifically is because we have a lot of ADHD in our family. And I'm happy to chat more about that if it comes up. But when you've come through life and been through the experience of having troubles focusing and regulating your focus, you get this neat experience of looking at life in a certain way. And we wanted it to be a place that was really safe for individuals with attention issues to go through that journey. So we now have, was three of us at the beginning. There's now 25 employees, depending on the maternity leave. So sometimes a little more, a little less. And it's a really special place. We feel passionate about what we do and work hard to build a culture where we see ADHD in a really positive space.
It's interesting, you know, you made the comment about maternity leave, and I'm pretty sure when I flip through your team, is there only one guy working with you guys? This is the gender disparity is something you guys don't suffer from, that's for sure.
Yeah, we have two now.
Yeah, oh, that's funny.
Two male psychiatrists. It looks like we're sort of a female colony, but we really don't get a lot of applicants that are male. So we are not prejudiced at all, but we do love our guys that are on the team. And you know, if anyone out there is wondering about coming joining the team and they're a guy, please apply. We would love to make it more equal.
so help me out. I know a little bit about it. My wife Elizabeth, she's a teacher. Every now and then, you know, somebody will be talking about it. You'll be at a dinner party. You'll read an article. ADHD. Mm-hmm. It seems to be so much more prevalent in the culture and in the conversation than it was. Well, you could help me out here, but even 10 years ago, and my brother, former principal, I would hear it from him. And so I don't know. Can you talk to me? Because you talked about attention sort of disorder. I mean, I would almost say I kind of fall into that to some degree. Mm-hmm. But have certainly never been diagnosed, and might smile if I said, oh, gee, I think I suffer from a little ADHD. I wonder to what degree I'm way off base, or actually maybe kind of speaking to the issue really at hand. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So I think there's a few things in there which I'd love to address. I think starting with the definition of ADHD. So in general, the way people have seen ADHD, whether in the media or sort of layman's terms, people chatting about it, it gets joked around a lot about a lot. It's kind of this word for I'm having trouble focusing, like a squirrel, you know, there's all these kind of jokes about ADHD. And I think one of the most meaningful parts of when we started Springboard and started to really ask ourselves that question, what is ADHD? We wanted to define it in a way that was different than just the symptoms the person is experiencing. So bear with me for a second, but instead of just saying I have inattention, hyperactivity, and impulsivity, and I struggle with those more than the normal person, we really started asking the question, well, why? And that became really interesting personally for me because I had always had troubles getting things done on time, which we can explore more after. But the when you're told by a physician or by an expert that you have this many symptoms of ADHD, you really hear all the things you can't do. So it's like, now I can't focus, I can't pay attention, I can't control my impulses. And I'm not really sure what you're supposed to do with that. So you get those kind of words like you're lazy, you procrastinate, you never get things done, you're if you applied yourself, you'd be better. And you get all this kind of negative dialogue. And when we dug in a little bit deeper and when you start to look at, well, how do we treat ADHD? What's the difference of a brain that has ADHD or does not? You get to a place where you can get a really amazing new perspective. Because when somebody has ADHD, yes, they struggle with those things in different amounts depending on the person. But more importantly, what's happening in the brain is that they're getting an imbalance of neurotransmitters to the prefrontal cortex. So the prefrontal cortex is at the front of your brain. It's in charge of starting tasks, staying on tasks, blocking out distractions, regulating emotions, and finishing tasks to completion. So if somebody is having a difficult time regulating all of those pieces of your executive functioning, in our day-to-day society, you're going to have a tough time. But people with ADHD, it's not that that part of the brain doesn't work. It's that it gets a burst of neurotransmitters and then a lull. So people with ADHD have trouble regulating these symptoms and focus. They're, rather than they just, you know, are just a lost cause. So we started to dig into this kind of definition of saying it's so much more empowering to learn about ADHD through the context of my brain being different and we can do different things to treat it. And then you start to ask the question that you kind of came to, which was, doesn't everybody have that? Or at least I think I might have that. And it really is on a spectrum. So you'd have sort of everybody's looking for pretty quick fixes in terms of information nowadays. You know, we're on our phones, we're grabbing, our headlines are getting shorter, our news stories are getting faster. Everything is kind of coming at you. But when you, and so you could say that everybody's attention span is probably getting a little shorter. But then those with ADHD, they're struggling with this imbalance that's actually impacting their life in a way that's impairing. So they're really not reaching their potential at home life or at school or in different contexts.
So how might it actually play out in my life or in my son's life if I'm diagnosed with ADHD, knowing that it is on a spectrum? I mean, is this something as simple as not attending to a project that's due on Friday or an email that needs responding to before noon on Tuesday? Can it be something as sort of simple as that? I mean, that could still be very complicated and could mean the difference between keeping your job, I suppose, and losing it, or getting a passing grade and a failing grade. Those are serious things. But I'm just wondering at what level, how deep this can go.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it can be as severe and debilitating as, you know, you're not able to function in class, you get kicked out of every school, you can't get any of your work done, you're unable to hold back your impulses. It's not safe to walk down the street with you as a child because you're, you know, impulsive running down the street. Like, it could be extremely on the severe side of dangerous. And there have been some really dramatic stats that have come out actually quite recently around, if it's untreated, if ADHD goes untreated in adulthood, higher risk of substance use, higher risk of divorce, higher risk of motor vehicle accidents. So on the extreme side, and that's not necessarily my favorite part of the topic, but on the extreme side of things, it can be really dangerous and it can be severe and it can be you know, trouble keeping a job and on disability and really, really difficult challenges. And part of that is the secondary symptoms that come from the challenges that you're dealing with. So you know, you struggle with impulse control and then you feel badly about it. And then you feel shameful and your self-esteem's low. And right. then it kind of cycles on itself. So on the extreme side, I mean, it can be very, very severe, all the way to sort of mild that, you know, I struggle a little bit with getting my work done. I could probably benefit from maybe some coaching or learning a little bit more about what I'm passionate about or getting some better skills in time management. So, I mean, you know, one way that would be interesting to sort of explain it is to think about depression.
Right.
So depression 20 years ago, people did not understand, you know, there was, or maybe it's not 20 years, but a while, some time ago, it used to be that people didn't believe in depression, like physical health issues were the sort of more talked about issue. If you didn't get out of bed because of depression, it was really like looked down upon and misunderstood.
Sure, you were lazy or come on, stiff upper lip, like, you know, get exactly. get your act together, all that stuff.
Now depression's well understood. I mean, ish. We still have a long way to go in mental health and stigma, but much more people understand. Well, ADHD, I think, is kind of on the same like journey of it's kind of been joked about. Oh, it's only kids. Oh, it's sort of, you know, everybody has that, to learning to saying, no, when you have an actual diagnosis of ADHD, it's impacting your life in multiple contexts. But I like to think about it on a spectrum because I think it's really helpful to say, hey, I struggle with some of that. And when we created this book, we certainly wrote it for adults with attention issues and ADHD, but we hope that it will be relevant for people in general to grab parts of it, because I think learning about how your brain works and what things get you motivated or focused or keep you on track, I think a lot of it, we hope, will be relevant to sort of a general audience as well.
Yeah, and this book is really, I want to ask you about there's lots of exercises in the book, and some of them I understand and some of them I don't, but I love the way you've put the book together, by the way. It actually looks fun. It looks like...
Thank you.
Yeah, it really does. But I want to talk a little bit about, definitely have a specific question about you, just about diagnoses and is it going undiagnosed? And maybe we can get that to in a second. Mm-hmm. But this idea of my philosophy about my own ADHD, and you talk about how important it is to understand that. And at some point, I think it was either in the workbook or on your website where I saw this phrase, without judgment and hope. And I wonder if that's connected sort of to this idea of, you know, my philosophy about my ADHD. It's about worldview. It's about being proactive. Mm-hmm. It's about stepping into it, I think. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. I mean, I think I was speaking with Anne. So I have a co-author who wrote this with me, her name is Anne Bailey, and she's a clinical psychologist. And it's interesting. So I come from I'm going to digress, but I'm going to come back to it.
Yeah, no, good, good.
I come from the sort of experience of having attention issues myself. So I grew up with the sort of dialogue of, you know, report cards saying if she applied herself, she would do better. I was an enthusiastic, like energetic, pleasing kid, but I kept getting sort of this feedback, like if she tried harder, she would do better. And I never really understood it. My parents were both physicians. So I grew up in a family where academics were a high priority. And yet there was always this kind of piece that I was like, I don't know why I procrastinate, why I can't get things done. And, you know, I went through this kind of journey of never understanding what that was all about. It didn't match. And I think that's a lot of people that describe having, you know, attention, whether it's ADHD or attention issues or some level of issue in this area, is that there's just sort of this missing piece you can't quite put your finger on. And so when you don't know why you're struggling, it's very hard to fix, right? Mm-hmm. So you know, am I lazy? Am I, why, what? I don't know why. And you just put so much blame on yourself.
Well, I think, Laura, it would become so sort of self-perpetuating, right? I mean, the spiral downwards would come quickly, it seems to me.
Absolutely. And when you get to a place where you can say, oh, I have attention issues, this is how my brain works, these are the workarounds I need to do, this is what I struggle with, this is like, you know, what I can be vulnerable about. When you get to a place where you can deeply look at the way your brain works, and again, I think this can apply beyond ADHD, but just in general, thinking, how does my brain work? When does it shut down? When does it wake up? And when you have ADHD, it kind of happens like more dramatically than the normal brain. So it wasn't until my 20s and 30s where I started to say, oh, I have attention issues. This is why I was sprinting my essays to the last minute before it was due. This is, and I'm not talking doing that once. I'm talking doing that every time. That this is why I'm so defensive and hard on myself when these kinds of situations happen. And so by becoming deeply self-aware, and I guess to come back to your question around the philosophy of ADHD, knowing how your brain works, knowing what your attention issues look like, what fires you up, what makes it really hard for you to do anything, and you feel like your brain is like seizing in the moment, learning all of that stuff, and then being willing to apologize when you make mistakes, ask for help when you need it, laugh when it's funny, come to terms and make this sort of philosophical viewpoint around the way your brain works. And I imagine that that's the same for many other mental health issues or gender issues or other things that people go through, sort of get into a place where you can sort of own it deeply and then create the life around you that suits the way you are.
So you are not a determinist. I mean, this is about taking hold of your life and I want to use the word responsibility, but that almost sounds kind of judgmental and pejorative. It's not meant to. It's just, this is about getting a diagnosis, being proactive and stepping into it and making, like the workbook says, it talks about emotional impacts and social impacts and things as specific as meeting deadlines and so on. This is about, you know, embracing life. Is that way too positive? Like,
no, I mean, I think sometimes we at the clinic tend to be almost over positive.
Right.
Know what it is. We're like, right. We have ADHD. People are like, oh no. You're like, no, it's okay. We know what to do. So, right. I mean, I think that the biggest concern when you have a challenge like this is not coming to terms with it. So whether that means coming, you know, getting a diagnosis, whether that means medication or not, or coaching or therapy, but or all of those things. But I think, I think it's important to note that some people have much more severe symptoms, but then also have had more challenges in their sort of upbringing or other factors that have made it even worse for them. And so I want to be clear that, you know, some people's journey is like extremely hard, right? I don't know, mm-hmm. another traumatic, all of those things. So I think, you know, seeing it on a spectrum and being aware that there's extremely severe cases and those individuals really need a lot of support and they will, you know, need to dig deep and, you know, it will be a long journey. It's not an easy road.
Right. Yeah. And not for a second am I suggesting that, or I think the workbook does that, but what I love about it is that this is about kind of taking ownership and taking the lead, as you say in the workbook.
Yes. I do truly believe that. And I had an interesting chat with Anne, my co-author, sort of after we wrote the book. And I was saying, you know, am I being too positive? I actually asked her that question. Because she doesn't have ADHD at all. And she's a psychologist. So it's the perfect person for me to ask, coming from the attention issues myself. I said, am I being too positive sometimes? Do you think, like, do you really think self-awareness can set people with ADHD free? And, you know, she really felt the same way as I do. And we've worked with, you know, hundreds of people and at the clinic, thousands. And we see that the people that are willing to be honest, to be vulnerable, to dig deep around how their brain works, to avoid making excuses, to just really be willing to stare down who they are and, you know, where ADHD has changed them and where they can shift now that they have this new lens on life, you would not believe how incredible some of these stories are. You know, people that have gone through life and had no idea why all these things were happening to them, and then realizing, oh, like my brain works differently and I'm struggling with these things. And when they're willing to face that and dig into all of that and come out the other side, I mean, it is the most amazing opportunity to get to be part of.
Yeah, I'd love to hear about how important you think the community is around folks who have certainly just maybe received a professional or official diagnosis and who are actually, you know, trying to work through some of these issues. Because as you say, the journey is probably going to be quite long and quite challenging.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the community is so crucial. And one of the sections in the book is really about the individual figuring out who is their community and who they want to trust with their story. And because the community is essential. So I think if we take the individual saying that they're willing to take ownership and be honest and dig deep, that's a huge part of the journey. But then starting to realize what is my, having had like undiagnosed ADHD to this age, what has been the impact on those around me that love me? You know, how has this impacted their lives? Mm. An example is let's say that I'm working with, you know, a couple who has, and the husband has ADHD, let's say, and he's late for his wife. Well, before kind of coming to terms with ADHD, his story would probably sound something like the traffic was bad and, you know, I got this happened and sort of this whole journey around why he's late for the wife. And the wife sort of is waiting to hear, sorry, and this happens all the time, kind of a feeling. And so she feels like there's no apology. He ends up sort of getting lost in his own journey and they sort of disconnect over time. Mm-hmm. So when you come to terms with a diagnosis of ADHD and being able to say, sorry, I'm late, that is a huge part of sort of building relationships and coming to terms with how to move forward. So those kinds of examples over many years mean that your community can be kind of exhausted or frustrated or tired and sort of figuring out how to build a new community, a new space where there's less stigma so that they can become themselves.
What's a blocker? I mean, you know, it's so interesting. I mean, as I ask you that question, I smile because, I think so much of what I've seen in the workbook, and by the way, congratulations. And it's available on Amazon, is it not? A quick shout out, right? Amazon.ca.
It is. Thank you. And it's a lot of work to figure out how to get it on Amazon. So thank you.
I look at it and it looks not, and I don't want to use this again as a throwaway term, but it really has this sort of motivational self-help kind of component built into it. I mean, there's some very good lessons here for everybody, it seems to me.
Well, thank you. You know, it was interesting because I sent it to one of my best friends early on who does not have ADHD at all. And one of the first things she said is, oh, I love it. And I want to do all the exercises.
That's right.
I thought, what? I'm like, that's awesome. But I didn't exactly know that. So I think that one of the things that happens, you mentioned that you talk about ADHD at cocktail parties. As soon as I tell anyone what I do for a living, the topic becomes the brain and attention issues and ADHD for the rest of the evening.
Right. I'm sure.
Because I think people all resonate with, you know, some of these challenges and some of these frustrations. So yeah, I mean, I hope that it is relevant for people beyond those that have ADHD, but also that it's relevant to those who know people with ADHD. So, you know, speaking about community, I think if there's a more understanding about ADHD and about how this impacts people, we can avoid so much of the hurt, the shame, and, you know, the challenges that these people experience.
You know, and maybe now's the time. I'd love to go back to that idea of blocker too, because I think it's so interesting as a metaphor for all of us, frankly, because I think we all suffer from that on a certain level. But that comment you made about shame, it just kind of went fairly deep. I mean, the guilt and the shame that I think so many of us carry around with us because of our upbringings or because of situations that we've gone through or unresolved broken relationships, dysfunction, etc., mental health issues, you know, I think it's pretty profound. And one thing I've learned, you know, I mean, I think I'm coming up on about 450 interviews with face to face, and I feel so sort of thrilled and blessed to be able to meet people like you and have these conversations that, you know, as I often say to my listeners, you know, we're barely scratching the surface, but at least I've gone a little bit deeper than most. I just feel so sort of, it's just wonderful to be able to walk through these doors. But I think it's about empathy. And it's about trying to, I don't know, include others and embrace others and say, you know, like you just said, who's in my community? And isn't it kind of about healing of one kind or another?
I think definitely. And I think, you know, there's a lot of conversation right now around what's happening to our communities on a sort of societal level, that, you know, people are more distanced and lonely, and there's more suicide. And I mean, it's you can see a pretty depressing side of it, right? That people are feeling distant. And so thinking about issues like shame and seeing opportunities for empathy. I mean, one of the things on a sort of a fun side of things is people with ADHD tend to think outside of the box. And right. when sort of with the proper scaffolding and structure and you know, self-work, often do incredible things. I mean, there are a lot of people with ADHD doing amazing things. The CEO of Shopify came out and shared that his story was ADHD, like, and I don't know the exact story of his situation, but related, made it seem that he has ADHD on Twitter recently. And, you know, that's somebody who's changed the world. And, you know, there's all these amazing stories of people doing amazing things with ADHD. So I think, you know, when we're able to help people harness their best selves, our community gets better. And that's done through empathy and figuring out, well, what are you good at and what am I good at? And how do we work together to sort of create a better society by sharing those skills and reducing the shame of what we're not good at? And I think we have to work as a group to do better at that. I think we have to work at getting our school system to better integrate people that are exceptional learners, that learn differently, because they probably have solutions in there that the sort of normal brain doesn't see.
I mean, it sounds to me like we're in a better place than we were today. Organizations like Springboard don't exist. Workbooks like this weren't around 20 and 30 years ago. Teachers probably didn't have the training they have, and so on and so on. Do we have a long way to go, would you say? Is there still a significant stigma attached to it? Is there a lack of understanding around it as far as you're concerned?
I mean, I would say yes. Like, I think we have come a long way. I think there's pockets now and there's resources where you can go. And, you know, the amazing initiatives like Bell Let's Talk have come out. And there's amazing sort of examples of mental health becoming more to the forefront. And, you know, those stories of amazing teachers that really understand it. But I think as a whole system, I think we can still do better. But I think we're on the right track. Right. Yeah. I think that we can continue to support each other and help figure out how to bring forward people's strengths and gifts and continue to have a system that allows those kinds of opportunities. But you also talked about blockers, and I think that's actually relevant in this conversation, that we talk about blockers in the book, and we use that term because it's a nice neutral language for when you get stuck. And that can happen to anyone in any circumstance, but you're working on something and you kind of hit a blocker and you can't move forward. So maybe it's that you aren't able to get your homework done, or maybe it's that you have a huge project at work and you're struggling to get it done, or maybe you want to ask a girl out and you're blocked. It can happen with any part of life, and coming to terms with what stops you and doing the work to really understand what gets in the way of your goals is what the blockers kind of talk is all about. Even something like, I want to go to the gym once a week. Well, what holds you back specifically from doing that? And sort of doing that work to understand deeply what gets in the way of your goals is what the blocker concept is all about.
What would you say about diagnosis? You know, I don't want to oversimplify. I want to make this simple, but I do want to attend to the fact that people are probably listening who are wondering if they're suffering from these types of or from this kind of a specific diagnosis. And gee, maybe I could be helped if I could actually break through and get it, you know, get to that next step. Is it about visiting your GP? Is it about doing research online? Where does one go?
Mm-hmm. So there are some great sort of starting websites that you can kind of get some information. Obviously, our own website we think is great, springboardclinic.com. Sure. But there's some other really fun websites. That one of my favorites is called totallyadd.com. And so it's with Rick Green, who's an awesome comedian, and he's hilarious, and he has ADHD and has done an amazing job building a website that has a community, and it's totallyadd.com, and I highly recommend it. It'll help you sort of see if you identify with the stories of those that he shares. There's also an excellent website that documentary that David Suzuki did last year called ADHD Not Just for Kids. And it's online as well. It's on the CBC website, and it's just an amazing documentary that kind of tells you what ADHD is and isn't and how it looks. I think there are a lot of adults that, you know, might have gone through the school system in a particular way and have kind of always known they had attention issues, but also don't really know what you can do about it as an adult. And so that's another part that's been illuminating for us, is we open the clinic to see all ages, but we see like over 65%, maybe 70% adults rather than children. And that there are many, many adults out there that kind of know that feeling. I've always struggled with that and just have really never known where to go. Definitely their GP is an option once you've kind of checked out a few stories and seen whether that resonates. Most family doctors now are pretty good at screening and being able to give you some preliminary thoughts.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's interesting. You know, I commented about how you can be at a cocktail party or at somebody's house and it comes up. And ADHD almost has become a part of the culture to a degree to which I wonder if we're actually not doing it any favors. So I don't, let me tease this out a little bit. I'm sort of thinking this through as I ask you this question, as I make this comment. But you know, somebody makes a comment about having trouble meeting a deadline, et cetera. Oh, you know what? That happens to me too. From time, I mean, maybe you got a little ADHD, right? It's almost trite. It's almost like it's almost a joke. It's as if you're, you know, attending to the fact that, oh, gee, maybe that was a tiny bit uncomfortable there. So I'm going to throw out the ADHD card, and then we can maybe move on. But the truth of the matter is, maybe they do. And maybe they do need to look into that a little bit more. Anyway, I'm not sure where I'm going with that, but I think there's something to that notion.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of really important parts in that. I think one is that we should stop joking about it.
Right.
It's not funny when you've met with people that have, you know, when I've seen hundreds of individuals with ADHD, it's not funny, and it's real. It's the most studied psychiatric childhood disorder in the world. We understand it really well. We know what's happening in the brain. We also know how to treat it. So there's the part of, no, not everybody has ADHD, and, you know, starting to take it seriously for those that you know, do have the level of attention issues that are impacting their lives. But also, it's treatable. So if, you know, you do think you have these kinds of issues, going to see your doctor and going through the process, people do way, way better. And there are a lot of myths. So for example, people think that if you're successful, you can't have ADHD.
Right.
You know, and you, when you end up speaking with somebody who's successful, but they have ADHD, they'll tell you about some of the things that are not going so well. You know, maybe it's their marriage, or maybe they feel like they're doing great as a CEO of a company, but they're not present with their children, or, you know, they're not able to get they've got substance use issues, or they're not able to get their handle on their fitness. So you'll see these other chronic health issues. And that's where some of the stats are coming in that are concerning, is when ADHD is not treated, higher levels of obesity, higher levels of substance use, and some of these other health factors.
Is Laura, you know, sadly, we're going to have to wrap it up shortly. I can't believe it, but it's true. And again, once again, sort of barely scratching the surface here, which is why you've got to get out and get the workbook. And you can order it on Amazon. And we'll provide a link for people to do that as well. But would you say that is ADHD sort of the starting diagnosis, or is it the symptom of a greater problem, or is it the issue that leads to these other things? So it's not all these other things. It's really, and this is why it's so fundamentally important to get that proper diagnosis.
Yeah, sometimes one of the ways that I say that is that the good news is that we know why so many things are being challenged for you. It's one thing. The bad news is that thing is a big thing to treat. So it's kind of where ADHD can sort of put its tentacles out to bother a lot of your different parts of your life. But when you get ADHD well treated, pretty much all of your life gets better. So it's that feeling where it's kind of like you can come to it from different pathways. So probably the most common that we see in adulthood is they come with clinical depression or high levels of anxiety. So usually you've hit a big wall. Mm. And you're no longer, you've lost your partner, or you've lost your job, or, you know, something big has happened and the way that you used to sort of function isn't working anymore. And then the whole truth kind of comes out. So usually that's when we see someone, and then we work backwards to finding the root.
Is it important to go to your GP first? Because I wonder, and no disrespect to GPs, but they don't know everything, and they're very busy, and they don't have a ton of time. I just wonder about misdiagnosis. Is it possible that this could get left or pushed to the wayside? Like my father, I don't know if he had this or not. I don't think he did. But my dad would have been of the he passed away about 5 years ago. But he would have been, you know what, I'll live with it. You know, like that would have been his approach. Very stiff British upper lip kind of. What David? What are you talking about? ADHD? I've never heard of it. You know what I mean? But if a doctor actually said, you know, Harold, boom, A, B, C, D, then he might have listened. So with that proper diagnosis, that becomes the catalyst for change, or the stepping stone to making the next, you know, the next important decision.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the tricky parts about ADHD is that you have to see it, or right, your partner or your parent, like someone very close has to identify
it.
Got it. First, because there's no blood test, right? You can't say like, oh, I did your blood test screening and turns out you have ADHD, we should check out what's going on. I mean, we might get there with brain scans, but that's another whole can
right,
of worms.
Right.
But I think that there has to be some level of either self-awareness or someone close to you that you're willing to listen to awareness to start it out. But then I think it's hard to sort of speak for all GPs. I think there are many GPs that really understand ADHD and are passionate about what they can do to help with it. It's certainly growing in terms of awareness in the medical field. But I think if you were to bring it up to your GP and you don't get the response that feels reflective and, aware enough, then a second opinion would probably be something to consider.
Yeah, that's probably not a bad place to go. Second opinion, yeah, for sure. Sometimes I think, though, I know I do, you know, you sort of acquiesce, right? Well, the doctor knows best, right? But in some cases, if it's a chronic thing, it's definitely worth reaching out to others. And this, again, is where the community around you becomes so important, it seems to me. So somebody says, and we're going to wrap it up here in just a minute or two, tell me what the 112-page workbook really is going to do for me. That's a lot of material there, Laura. What am I taking from, like, do you have that elevator speech?
I do. I mean, one of the, not to digress too much, but we are building an online course that will roll out in the fall.
Nice.
It's going to be to help people get through the book. So I think the best part about the book, in my view, as a completely unbiased writer,
that's right,
is that it kind of has everything in there.
Yes.
The bad news is it has everything in there. So right, it's a lot to take in. So I think, you know, the journey of this book is to go through a process about yourself that will allow you to really deeply understand where your attention issues impact your life and where your identity can kind of get separated from the challenges that you experience. And then we'll really walk you through your history, your now, across all your different health choices, and then work through what team do I want around me, what blockers get in my way, all the way to sort of getting to a place where you're making goals and moving forward. I think it is a book that can really transform your life if you put the energy into it. But if it feels like a lot, then join our course, because we're going to help people go through it.
Well, you know, it seems to me to be the, and I think, you know, you are a coach, so you would understand this. I apprenticed as an electrician. The analogy breaks down, believe me, but I had support for 8,500 hours. I was alongside of somebody else that was teaching me how to do things in a particular way, who had 30 years experience on me, etc. And I think the idea of having a mentor, a community, a coach alongside of you makes so much sense, especially with something as important as this. Thanks for chatting today. And again, congratulations on the book. It's May We Have Your Attention, Please. It's a Springboard Clinic workbook for living and thriving with adult ADHD. Laura, your website is springboardclinic.com.
Correct.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Lots of information there, folks. Check it out. Thanks a lot, Laura. I really appreciate your time today. And again, congratulations on an important and meaningful read.
Thank you very much.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.